Welcome to The Greek Current, a podcast by Halk and Kathimerini. I'm your host, Thanos Davelis. This week, Western Balkan leaders will travel to Brussels for a high-level meeting with EU leaders where they will discuss progress on their integration with the European Union and the challenges posed by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The meeting comes as the debate over EU enlargement picks up again, which has seen calls from key European leaders for the EU to live up to its promises to the Western Balkans and take meaningful steps to integrate the region into the European family. Expert Florian Bieber joins me to look at how the war in Ukraine is impacting the debate over EU enlargement, putting the Western Balkans' hopes of integration into the EU back in the spotlight. Florian Bieber is a professor of Southeast European history and politics and director of the Center for Southeast European Studies at the University of Graz in Austria. He's also a coordinator at the Balkans and Europe Policy Advisory Group. Florian, welcome back on The Greek Current.
Thanks for having me again.
Florian, the world has changed a great deal since Putin's invasion of Ukraine, particularly for Europe. How is this impacting the debate over European enlargement? And I want to focus here on the Balkans.
Well, I mean, to some degree, enlargement has come to be on the top of European agenda ever since the application for membership of Ukraine and then also Moldova and Georgia. So that didn't bring inherently the Western Balkans back on the top of the agenda, but enlargement became a big topic. It was kind of pretty much ignored and kind of sidetracked in recent years. So at least it focused attention across the continent, also how to respond to those applications and what that means for the Balkans. So I think that's one way in which the war and the Russian aggression against Ukraine and Ukraine's response has brought this on the agenda. I think the other way is how we've seen that, you know, these kind of vacuums, these places which are not included in full European structures, create instability and, you know, potential for conflict in the case of Ukraine. So that also signaled a sense of urgency to make sure that the business in the Western Balkans is completed. Of course, most of the countries are NATO members, so that provides the external security, but three of them are not. And so there's a sense that there is business to be completed in the Western Balkans, and that if one doesn't do it, that one provides for opportunities for abuse by others.
Would you agree then with Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis, who recently wrote in an op-ed for Politico that Europe's at a defining moment when it comes to the Western Balkans?
It certainly is. I mean, I think it's not just about the Western Balkans. In fact, you know, I would argue, and I have been saying this, that the Western Balkans enlargement was a response to the last, you know, big European war, which was the war in the 1990s in Yugoslavia, and the realization that, you know, to bring permanent peace to the Balkans requires not just peace settlements as we had in Dayton or in 1999, the peace ceasefire between Serbia and NATO, but we need also the permanent integration of the countries into the European Union. That was very much the conclusion of that. The enlargement process was the result of the last war. And so the new applications of Ukraine and the others are in a certain way the response to the current war. And it kind of always highlights that to bring peace, you need just this kind of integration to the larger European structures, permanent peace. And, you know, you need to finish the business in the Balkans. And that's, I think, what has become very clear, that it may be refocused minds that enlargement is not just a technical process. It's not just about kind of bringing the countries into Europe, but it's about securing peace in that part of Europe permanently. Because without full integration to the European Union, you always have a certain greater risk of a return to conflict, not now, but down the road.
Despite the calls we've been seeing for integration for this region into the EU, there are key stumbling blocks that remain. And most notably, we have to highlight Bulgaria's veto over North Macedonia's accession process. In fact, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz was recently in Bulgaria to try to achieve a breakthrough on this. Why is this proving to be such a difficult problem to solve?
Well, the tricky thing about all of that is that it's very difficult to unblock a veto by a single member state. I mean, you know, we've had, you know, for many years, Greek objections to the name of back then the Republic of Macedonia, now Republic of North Macedonia. And we've had subsequently a French veto. We've had a Slovenian veto against Croatia. I mean, there's a record of individual member states airing their individual grievances towards an accession country. And that is very hard to unlock, especially when it focuses on identity questions, which, you know, Bulgaria put on the agenda in a very surprising way. I mean, the Greek opposition to the name of Macedonia was at least something which goes back to the, you know, independence period. So it was well known. And however one positions oneself, it wasn't this kind of surprise thing like Bulgaria, which kind of pulled it out of a hat nearly, I mean, or made an issue very ad hoc. But once it's there, it's hard to undo it, because well, you know, the Bulgarian government has to basically take a step back, but that's very hard to do without losing face. And other countries have to be careful that, you know, by putting pressure, they don't create a counter reaction of, you know, kind of stubborn refusal, but also not to push North Macedonia to make, you know, agree to things which really kind of touches fundamental questions of its own identity when it's already made compromises in the Prespa agreement. So it's really tricky. And I think that the visit of Scholz is, you know, was a good sign that Germany wants it moving, but it's not about symbols. It needs to have actual solutions of how to unlock this. And that's something which requires a lot of informal backroom negotiations, which bring in not just North Macedonia and Bulgaria, but which bring in the US, big EU member states, which combine a kind of assortment of pressure against Bulgaria, as well as rewards. And, you know, probably the pressures which should be used should be not used in public when a government then will engage in grandstanding, but this is more something which is done behind closed doors. So it's a very tricky issue. And, you know, the worry is that, of course, that every veto and the longer it goes on and the more successful it is, begets another veto. That, you know, if another country will be seeing this as an opportunity to use it for their own purpose. And, you know, there are plenty of bilateral issues which are open and which are, you know, kind of risking to come to the foreground. There are lots of open questions between Croatia and Bosnia-Herzegovina. There are lots of open questions between Croatia and Serbia. And, you know, it's quite imaginable that, you know, even if the Bulgarian veto is resolved, that we're going to have another one lurking around the corner. And then that the risk is that this process just becomes completely never-ending and also subject to individual member states in a certain way, very often domestic political concerns.
Do you think that there's any room in the short term then for compromise within Bulgaria on this issue?
It seems very difficult. I mean, it's very hard to kind of predict. I mean, there have been signals of which have been encouraging over recent months and weeks. But then the current government is so unstable and it seems like it might collapse. And as a result, then, of course, whether we have a new election cycle upon us or government transformation, all of these are not good circumstances for a government to engage in a compromise. I mean, the best way you can have a compromise if you have a stable government with a majority, which doesn't have to worry about this issue being exploited at the ballot box. And unfortunately, that's not the situation right now. So it does leave one with a certain worry that this is going to continue to linger for a while.
In your view, given that it's unlikely that we'll see any movement on European integration then in the short term, what's the best hope or, you know, the best course of action for Western Balkan states?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of things which can be done by the European Union on all of that. I mean, I think there can be a lot more done to try to put pressure on Bulgaria and try to resolve this issue. And I would really prioritize that because it's not the only problem of the EU enlargement, but it's certainly the current biggest stumbling block. I mean, my approach has been using the whole momentum which we see through Ukrainian application is to actually, first of all, give all of the countries of the Western Balkans candidate status. Bosnia-Herzegovina certainly would be just as much ready for it as Ukraine is and has also gone through a horrific war 30 years ago. So, you know, it's not like it's been kind of like having an easy cruise towards this process. But also Kosovo. I mean, Kosovo, we know, is not recognized by five member states, including Greece. But one can say, well, you know, yes, that has to be resolved once Kosovo joins the European Union. But at the moment, there's an asymmetry. Serbia is able to negotiate about accession and Kosovo is not. And it would be really much better if Kosovo became a candidate and if actually accession talks would begin with all of the countries. Because again, once you start accession talks, you're not going to join next year. It can take a decade or more, but it's the best way to really test whether governments are able and willing to do what they need to do to join the European Union. And it would create a sense of competition and would be also a signal for Ukraine that this is a real living process. So from the countries themselves, you know, I would be banging on the doors of the European Union and, you know, really reminding them every day of what they should do, but also do your own job. I mean, the problem is that many of the governments, and I'm thinking particularly of the government in Serbia, but also in Bosnia, you know, their commitment to joining the EU is half-hearted at best. And there's a lot which could be done. I'm afraid that those governments probably, you know, Bosnia is a complicated country, so, you know, that's tricky in its own right. But in Serbia, we have a very simple government in the sense that one man decides everything. And I don't think President Vucic is that interested in joining the European Union. At least we don't see the signs. But that's, of course, the other big challenge we're seeing in the region.
In a few days, Western Balkan leaders are going to be traveling to Brussels for a high-level meeting with EU leaders. What should we expect from this meeting?
I'm afraid not much. I mean, this is a high-level meeting. It's not a summit. I mean, there was supposed to be a Western Balkan EU summit this year. It's not happening. And that already in itself tells you a lot about what's going on with the process. So I don't expect a clear signal from either side at the moment, because, again, that issue with Bulgaria is not sorted. And so everything else seems like, you know, empty promises. So I think the risk is that we see lots of words like a European perspective for the Western Balkans, but that's been said many times and it's just no longer credible. I mean, what would be helpful would be, for example, visa liberalization for Kosovo citizens, which has been one thing where it's the only country of the Western Balkans whose citizens can't travel to the EU freely, despite clear recommendations by the European Commission. So there would be some space for sending a positive signal. But I'm afraid that if we kind of come back from this meeting just as we stand today without any kind of significant tangible change with just a few empty words, then I think people will get even more cynical and more disillusioned about the European Union. And that's really not in the EU's interest. And it really kind of raises the question of saying, you know, the EU has to, in a certain way, understand its historical mission and do more and send a clear message to also the member states who have been, for whatever reason, standing in the way of all of that and move forward. And a lot of, in a certain way, responsibility lies with the countries which are supporters of enlargement, you know, countries like Germany, like Greece, like Italy, like Austria, to really, you know, not just say that they support enlargement, but actually do something about it and really kind of work in a concerted effort to get this process moving.
Florian, thanks for joining us again. Always great speaking with you.
Thanks for having me.
In other news, Greece began bracing for this summer's first heat wave on Tuesday, with meteorologists warning that it is expected to drag on until the end of the month, with temperatures rising above 40 degrees Celsius. Temperatures are expected to be 2 to 3 degrees higher than the average for this time of year across the country. Experts have warned that even if the spikes are quite brief, the extended nature of the heat wave will be a challenge for a lot of people. The heat wave will also put Greece's power grid to the test, as it will lead to an increase in electricity consumption and because Gazprom will stop the flow of natural gas between June 21st and 28th for scheduled maintenance of the TurkStream pipeline. Finally, discussions between Turkey, Finland, and Sweden about the Nordic countries' NATO membership will continue, and an alliance summit in Madrid next week is not a deadline, Turkey said after talks in Brussels on Monday. Turkish presidential spokesman Ibrahim Kalin said Ankara was expecting Sweden to take immediate steps regarding actions by the Kurdistan Workers' Party. The head of Finland's delegation at the talks in Brussels said the sides had made clear progress on certain issues, but it would take time to reach an understanding on others. NATO leaders will convene in Madrid on June 29th and 30th. Any NATO membership requires approval of all 30 members of the alliance. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.